Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our May board meeting. And we're going to start our deliberations on fair value measurements. Mariela.
Yeah. Good afternoon. Thank you, Hans. We'd like to start discussing agenda paper 14C because the decisions on this paper will affect the decisions on the other papers. So this paper describes the discussions that we have had with the Interpretations Committee last week. We met with the committee because we received a request to clarify the use of Level 1 inputs and the interrelation between these Level 1 inputs and the portfolio exception in IFRS 13. And we would like to inform the board about these discussions because we think those discussions might have implications in our plan to publish an exposure draft to clarify the measurement of quoted investments. What we discussed last week was whether an entity is permitted to use the portfolio exception to measure the net risk exposure of a portfolio that consists of identical Level 1 financial instruments, or whether an entity in that situation would be required to measure the individual financial instruments at their corresponding Level 1 prices. In that, if an entity is allowed to use the portfolio exception for measuring the net risk exposure of those portfolios, then there is a question that arises. How should this net risk exposure be measured? By referring to the individual financial instruments that are comprised within that net risk exposure, or should an entity measure that net risk exposure as a whole and apply any adjustments, premiums or discounts accordingly? What the committee concluded is that IFRS 13 does not provide a clear answer. There are not clear guidance to answer this question. And they ask you, they ask the staff to present these concerns to the ISB. We think that that issue has similarities to the issue that we have been discussing in February and March about the fair value of investments when those investments are quoted. And as a result, we think that we should be discussing the portfolio issue before publishing the exposure draft. Of course, the immediate consequence is that the exposure draft will be delayed, but we think that the advantages of analyzing these two issues together outweigh any cost that this delay might cause. And if the ISB agrees with this recommendation, we would not ask the ISB to give us permission to ballot the ED. And as a result, we would not discuss agenda paper 14B, which describes the due process followed. So the question for the board is whether the board agrees that we should discuss the portfolio issue, the portfolio exception issue, before publishing the exposure draft on the measurement of investments that are quoted at fair value.
Philippe?
I don't object. I'm not sure we have to do that. Seems to me the two issues are not exactly the same, but it makes sense to start with the second one before we move to the first one. It seems to me there is a kind of contradiction in the terms we use when we talk about a net risk position, and then measuring each instrument in this position separately, which is no longer net but gross. So what's the point of making talking about the net exposure and then measuring each instrument separately? It's not net, it's gross. It's kind of presentation issue, how we address it.
This net risk exposure is comprised of financial instruments that can be identified on an individual basis and that have Level 1 inputs prices. So that's why.
We can do that, but let's not talk about a net exposure. Then what's the point of talking about net if we always consider the gross?
I think there's two issues, because we went back and had a look at the board paper from when the portfolio exception was originally discussed, and that paper very much focused on the fact that we use examples, so you had 1,000 assets and 950 liabilities of the same instrument, the paper was very much focused on netting the 950 assets against the 950 liabilities. So it was very much focused on not having to look at the 1,000 assets and the 950 liabilities. But it didn't then really talk in much detail about how you measured the net 50 that was left over. So it was very much based on looking at the offsetting component of it. So
Anderson Bettel, which the other point is, if we discuss paper 14A, just if, I believe we need to address the transition in a slightly different way. So far, until we issued the modification to IFRS 10, investment entities, some of them, were consolidating their investees, control investees, not applying fair value. In their carrying amount, they had goodwill as part of their acquisition. Then we tell them, stop consolidating, use fair value accounting. I don't know how they did or are going to do the transition absent our guidance that we propose to issue for dealing with the goodwill, which might be a control premium. And that control premium can be no longer reflected in the market price today. So, if in the transition from the old IFRS 10 to the new one, they decided to use a fair value measurement which did not cancel the effect of the control premium, and they had to take the difference between carrying amount and fair value to equity as part of the transition to IFRS 10, we are now telling them, no, P times Q, if we agree on P times Q, which may not be able to reflect the control premium, which may no longer be in the market price. And then we tell them this new difference between the old fair value as determined and the new fair value as we wish it to be will have to be taken to P&L, which is the transition proposed. I think that's very harsh. I think what we are proposing, if we do it, is a clarification to the way they should apply fair value under IFRS 10. And that should be part of the transition from the consolidation standard to the fair value standard, not a separate change with a P&L impact on the change.
Do you think that any changes in the fair value measurements of those investments will be changes that can be considered analogous to changes in accounting estimates? And that's why we proposed prospective application in the transition provisions, as IFRS 13 did. When the board discussed the transition provisions for IFRS 13, it noted that the exposure draft had also proposed prospective application, and the majority of the respondents agreed with this. So that's why we have had them in the same way.
I heard you telling me that, but I did agree fundamentally. What we are proposing is a clarification of how to apply fair value, which is a new standard for investment entities. It's a clarification, and any change from consolidation to the final right way to do fair value should be part of the transition from consolidating to fair value accounting for investment entities without having two different treatments for the first way they did it and then the correction of the way they did that. Anyway, that's fine.
Well, if we're going to do something, then I think we need to do it together. But I query whether we should... I don't really know what the Interpretations Committee is thinking. I'm not sure they do yet, but...
They didn't have enough guidance in IFRS 13. They could, that the issue was too broad for them to answer, and they thought that the best way was to... that the issue was going to be dealt with the ISB.
Initially, we never had this portfolio exception, did we? When we were first discussing
IS 39, in the requirements of IS 39, that was...
Yeah, I know it was there, but then when we first were proposing IS 13, it wasn't there, and we introduced it at the last minute, and I was never particularly happy about putting it in. To my mind, the purpose of it is to make sure that you have the right position in the bid-ask spread, and you correctly take into account credit risk, looking at the net exposure when measuring fair value. And I'm rather concerned about paragraph 3A and then 3B and whether that is implying that there's something more to this portfolio exception that I thought we originally intended.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened at the Interpretations Committee. It became apparent that some people are thinking about the portfolio exception as really just focusing on what you're getting at, I think, which is to say, okay, in the example I had before, I've ended up with assets of 50, so let's value it as if it's a package of assets. So, you know, look at the bid-ask spread accordingly, et cetera. What some people seem to think the portfolio exception has done is gone a step further and actually said, now I'm not valuing a bundle of 50 instruments, I'm valuing this block of 50, and so therefore I can approach the valuation quite differently.
So you can ignore P times Q and go to some completely different valuation, and that's why I never agreed to that portfolio exception in the first place, because we should have just described appropriate point in the bid-ask spread and appropriately take into account credit risk.
And I think what the committee was reacting to is that it talks about an exception, but it doesn't really say specifically what it's an exception to,
right,
in IFRS 13, and that's what's leading to some questions.
The term exception initially refers to the fact that we are not measuring the fair value of an asset or a liability. We are just measuring the fair value of a net risk exposure.
Well, no, I don't think we are. I think we're still measuring the fair value of the individual assets and liabilities, but we're just taking into account the fact that there's a net exposure.
Well, this is a very particular case because the financial instruments within the portfolio are the same. But the portfolio exception aimed to price the net risk exposure to market risk or credit risk arising from that group of financial assets. Once we have this price, then we would allocate this market risk, the price of this market risk or the price of this credit risk to the individual financial instruments.
Yeah, and it's still P times Q.
It is, but I don't think it's clear. I share Stephen's concern, and like him, when this was being discussed, I had some agita about this. But I'm afraid, Steve, my concern is that, in fact, the board did vote with a clear conscience to approve 3A, and that essentially you're measuring a block, and that's why I think what we heard was that's practice. And hence, we should essentially conform the standard to practice, because there would be no reason, frankly, to even permit a net approach if we really intended the other way. You wouldn't need to use a net approach. So I'm afraid this was
by net approach. So how
take in your another example, 950 netted, and come to zero. That's what we decided, not 950 asset, 950 liability.
Okay, so the extent you've got the 950 that offset, you measure at the midpoint of the bid-ask spread.
You can do anything you want, but it's net of it. It's a block. You don't do assets separately, you don't do liabilities. It's not a two-step approach, it's a one-step approach. You net it, and you value the net number, whatever it is, to do that way.
That's what I thought they were asking us to permit.
Yeah.
And I thought that's what we acquiesced to.
But there is a step farther here, as Sue was saying before. So you had 1,000 financial assets, 950 financial liabilities. The question is, okay, can we measure this 50? Okay, yes or not? Let's say yes. Now, how do we measure this 50? Mm-hmm. Do we measure 50 times the individual P level 1 inputs? Or do we measure this 50 as it was a unit as a whole? So the net risk
That's
exposure as a whole is a block, as Sue was mentioning. And now we don't refer back to the level one prices, but we might adjust those level one prices for this 50.
We never intended that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We never intended that, but we never clarified. We never said if it is 50 needs to be, if there's a market, it should be P times Q. I agree with the answer. I'm just saying that it was a last minute. U.S. did it, that's why we had to do it, and we did it, and I appreciate all that, but we never said, if the 50 has P times Q, do P times Q. We didn't say that. I think it's implied, and I agree with it, but I don't think we have done it.
But I think the idea is we're going to bring a paper back that goes through all of this. It's not really asking you to vote today on the basis of two sentences.
Although the conversation,
a lot of emotion was there. That's why.
We go and we keep in mind that we'll get another paperback with all these issues to be discussed, if the board thinks that we need that paper.
Obviously there are two different kind of interpretation about the object we are measuring. And my understanding, very similar to what Pat just said,
when we discussed and we decided we're talking about something made of and they form a new asset or maybe new liability as a result, and they measure it. And this is my understanding. And actually, before we finalized the 13, I still clearly remember one of the discussions during the crisis, I think in summer of 2008, when we formed an expert group, discussed the guidance in somewhere in London. And one of the issues about this, and I particularly asked a gentleman from Goldman, I said, what do you mean? And why you say that we are actually evaluate a separate, a totally different package or asset? And he said, you know, the merchant banks quite often to do things like this. We buy lots of things and slice, repackage it, and sell out by some ways, even though they have underlines, but we try to summarize a package differently. And we are talking about new package, a new asset. He said it's meaningless to look through, to value the underlines. And this is my understanding.
Martin?
Man, I really don't understand the discussion, because if it is P times Q, which I assume what the board has decided at that point in time, what is the difference between net and cross? Because for me, P times Q does not make any difference if you measure it net or cross. So I don't understand really the problem. It's only if we think, okay, that for certain bigger units of accounts or portfolios, you don't have to P times Q, then it is a difference. But my understanding is the board has now said, okay, it is also in, if we value a kind of legal entity which is listed, then it is P times Q. And then even for a smaller, which is what we're discussing here, portfolio, I think it should also then be P times Q. But then there is not any difference between cross or net, based on my understanding. Or I'm missing something.
Tricia, and then I think we are ready to conclude. At least to conclude that we need a paper.
I support bringing it back, and I support delaying the decisions on the other issue until we resolved this one. I always thought the portfolio exception was meant as a practical expedient, so they didn't have to value each individual item, but the objective was to come up with the approximately the same value that they would have gotten had they valued each individual item. That was my impression. Keep in mind that we require gross presentation of the assets and liabilities unless they meet the offsetting criteria. So it would be a violation of, in my view, of the whole underlying premise of fair valuing the assets and liabilities if we were to say you're valuing a unit made up of the net and then somehow spread that value back to the gross positions, because we don't give any guidance on how that latter step is done, allocating back to the gross positions either. So I think we need a paper.
Who agrees with that? Paul? Okay. Mariela?
Yep.
Then we go to 14A.
Yes. In 14A, we had a few issues that we wanted to confirm with the board. And the plan was to have those last confirmations to put together an exposure draft. But those areas are still worth to be discussed today. The first matter that we would like to discuss is we analyzed whether IFRS 10, IAS 28, and IAS 27 needed to be amended for the purposes to clarify what is the unit of account that we are measuring at fair value. Is the unit of account the investment as a whole? Is the unit of account the individual financial instruments? And the board tentatively decided that the unit of account was investments as a whole, We analyze the requirements in those standards, and we think that those standards are clear in relation to what is what we are measuring. We think that from reading those requirements, we can see that what we are measuring is the investment. And as a result of this, we don't think that those standards need to be amended for this particular purpose. And the question to the board is whether they agree with our recommendation.
I really do not understand how we can say at the same time that what we measure is the investment, but we measure P times Q, which is a collection of unit investment. I think we have to give up one of the two, but we cannot be inconsistent in our logics. Now, my position, it's been since the very first day we discussed IFRS 13 unchanged. I think it's not P times Q, but I know I'm going to lose again on that one.
good.
Yeah, I know. But I still have my opinion. My point is on the transition. I think if we give a clarification of what we meant, and it wasn't clear, otherwise we would not do it, I think we have to give people a chance to treat it as an accounting policy change and take the difference, whatever it is, to equity. On the debt, the standard becomes effective, and not tell them it's a change in estimate, because it's quite different. I think clarification is really, if it was an interpretation, it would never be prospective, it would be retrospective. So.
Any others? Amaru?
A general comment on this whole aspect to this staff. So why are we doing this on a piecemeal basis? So IFRS 13 is just effective from 1st of January, and then you're proposing here for us to go ahead with this particular amendment, and then we'll have two other aspects that we are going to discuss and papers that would be brought by the staff. So is it really necessary for us to go ahead with this as proposed?
I think there are some decisions in this paper that are useful to have made today so that we can make progress. Those decisions will not impact the discussions that we have with the portfolio. The drafting is an initial draft that we have prepared, and that might change. And it was for you to have some idea, some flavor of what the amendments would look like. We understand that the amendments need to impact IFRS 13 because it is paragraph 69 in our view, the one that is not clear. But this is an initial draft.
Can we agree with the staff recommendation?
No.
Sorry. My concern with the staff recommendation is that it's a recommendation to amend IFRS 13 as opposed to IFRS 27 and 28 and IFRS 10, because it seems to me that we should put all the attributes of accounting for an investment in the standard that deals with the investment and exploring the unit, you know, explaining that when we use the words the item is the investment, explaining what the implication of that is in terms of the unit of account to me fits better in 27, 28 and IFRS 10. I can understand if you want to make the link to IFRS 13 in terms of saying what the consequences would be in terms of which pieces of IFRS 13 we'd look at. And therefore, well, I agree that we concluded in the previous meeting to make explicit the conclusion that the unit of account is the investment. I think the better way to do it would be in the standards that deal with accounting for the investments. So it's the part that says to amend IFRS 13 that I disagree with. And then kind of picking up on Philippe's point, I think we have to be more explicit then about P times Q being almost an IFRS 13 override of the conclusion about unit of investment, because otherwise you leave the reader trying to reconcile a bit the two bits. I think we just have to say that this is what we're doing.
Tricia?
I agree with Mary and Philippe.
So I think just to sort of summarise and make sure we understand what that proposal would mean, I think we were keen that all fair value measurement guidance be contained in IFRS 13 because that's sort of consistent with the structure of how IFRS 13 fits into the literature. But I think what the board members are saying is that perhaps what we should do is in IFRS 10 and 27 and 28, we should point to the relevant paragraphs in IFRS 13 that would, for example, have the P times Q guidance for level one. And so have a cross-reference. So in 10, 27, 28, you can see that you need to measure the whole of the investment as a unit, but you'll understand what that means from a 13 perspective with the signposting.
Which means that we do not agree with staff recommendations.
Yes, that's right. It means we'd put the changes into the other standards, which I think is gets you to the same place in a slightly different way.
It's a different way of executing the same objective rather than trying to do a different thing.
So what actually would change in those other standards?
I think we'd have a paragraph that would explain that if you were measuring that you're measuring the whole investment, but if it's a level one investment, you'd point to the P times Q paragraphs in 13 to make it clear that it would be P times Q, despite the fact that you're measuring the investment as a whole.
Maybe it's not a level one investment. What do you point to then?
The paragraph in 13, I think, which talks about the fact that you measure an asset based on its characteristics and taking into account the characteristics of the asset.
And this is where you lose me, because I don't see why, in terms of economics, you change your measurement method, whether it's a level one total investment or not.
I mean, that's the previous decision.
I know.
Staff's just saying how we'd implement
your decisions.
That's
why I did agree with that project.
We go.
We lost that one now. I not fully understand that, you know, how you can do, because the staff already investigate our related paragraph and they find a way to change it 69 and try to de-link the original decision and insert new ideas. And I'm not sure how can you do, you know, because, you know, in original paragraph clearly mentioned control premium and discount. And it is pervasive, it's not only related to uncoded, but now we split into two. And I don't know how can we try to make big changes, but without any big changes.
There are three paragraphs in IFRS 15 that refer to the use of level one inputs without adjustments, 69, 77, and 80. So it would be a matter of referring to those paragraphs when we are drafting the amendments to those other standards.
Yeah, you'd need to refer to paragraph 80, which is what Mariella just said, which says that if you hold a position, it shall be measured using the level one price. So I think the thing would be to emphasise that despite the fact that you're using, we're telling you to measure the investment as a whole, paragraph 80 of IFRS 13 is still relevant.
But then how
that would be the idea.
How people interpret another paragraph on premium discount?
On the unquoted.
We have to insert something?
Yeah, to explain it, only if it is not listed, not the one mark.
I think it's acknowledging, maybe in the basis for conclusion, that we perhaps saw some degree of conflict and we concluded which one overrode in that case.
Okay, so let me... Yeah, Stephen?
The problem with paragraph 80 is it's referring to the block discount issue. It's referring to normal daily volume. I'm not really dealing with this issue.
Which is why I think we need the extra signposting, because I think that unless you actually say, and by the way, this paragraph is still relevant, I think there is a risk people don't realise it's relevant to the situation. But I think if we do signpost it directly in conjunction with explaining the basis why we've done the signposting the way we have, we could get there. I mean, the alternative was we amend IFRS 13, which the staff thought was easier, but...
But stop saying that we are measuring the investment as a whole. Stop saying that, because it's no longer... It doesn't hold true if you say P times Q always. Because the exit value, the exit price of a block of control is probably higher than P times Q. So if fair value is exit price, don't say you apply it to the investment. Say you apply it to the collection of units which are in the investment.
Yeah, that's another way to just say that.
Well, it's not really, because
if there is a market for it, times P times Q,
otherwise when it's level 2 and level 3, you are looking at the investment as a whole. So we've got a tension.
So say when level 1, don't measure investment at all.
Yeah, that's what he says. I think that's a decent one.
Reasonable. Okay, but it's logical.
We should have another vote on P times Q.
No, if there is a market P times Q, otherwise to account the investment as a whole. That's what Philip is saying. And
so
I think
do we agree with the alternative recommendation to amend the other standards and IFRS 13?
Yeah.
Yes.
The second issue that we wanted to discuss is disclosures, which is in paragraph 10 of the paper. And we have never brought to the board disclosures, and in particular disclosure, any requirement for additional disclosures that these amendments might require or might trigger. We don't think that the amendments, the clarification on the measurement, should trigger additional disclosures. We think that we do have IFRS 13 that requires disclosures for assets and liabilities when they are measured at fair value. We do also have, in the case of cash generating units, amendments to the disclosures for recoverable amount when this is determined on the basis of fair value less cost to sell are coming at the end of this month. So we don't think that these proposed amendments should trigger additional disclosures, but we wanted to check with the board whether the board agrees with this recommendation.
Agreed.
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 And the last point that we would like to discuss with you is transitional provisions. I think you have already heard some discussions on this matter. We are proposing perspective because we think that these changes, these amendments will cause changes that could be analogized as changes in an accounting estimate. And these proposals would be aligned to IFRS 13 transitional provisions. The changes in fair value that those proposals might bring could be understood as an accounting estimate change, and this is why we are proposing perspective. And we are also proposing earlier application of the requirements and an effective date of 1st of January 2015, but probably this effective date we can discuss it when we bring it back, the portfolio bid, and we finalize all of the decisions to publish the exposure draft.
Yep.
So the question for the board is, in that particular case, for the measurement of investments at fair value, the transitional provisions, we are recommending perspective. Is the board agreeing with this decision, with this recommendation?
Why would we specify an effective date in NED? We don't normally do that.
We were specifying because of the publication of IFRS 13 and the amendments to investment entities. We wanted to bring those amendments as soon as possible. In some meetings we have done it, but and probably in the ones that we have done it, it was because those cities were urgent, were addressing urgent matters. We can leave it and hear what people say.
I think it was partly for signalling, Steve. I agree with you. We don't always do it, but I think because it's quite close to when we would publish it, if we were publishing in early 2014, we thought the signalling might be useful to get people's reaction to it.
And I'm not sure I agree with the change in estimate bit. Kind of with Philippe on this. You say it could be viewed as analogous to a change in accounting estimate. How could one view it as a change of accounting policy if you were to go for the alternative view? What would you say? Because you're not definite in here. You're not saying it is a change in accounting estimate.
Some companies or some entities might not have a change at all because they might be already applying P times Q. The ones that are not valuing the investment at P times Q could be considered as a change in the valuation technique, and IFRS 13 perceive a change in the valuation technique as an accounting estimate. So that's why.
I believe it's either a correction of error or a change in accounting policy. A change in estimate is only something which is voluntary by management, and here we are forcing on people.
Yeah.
And either they got it wrong, and then we tell them you were wrong, it's a correction of error, or we bring some clarification, which is a new guidance, and then it's a change in accounting policy. It cannot be a change in accounting estimate, I don't think so.
But I think the central thing is that are we going to do it prospective or retroactive, right? Yeah. That's the central thing you are after. And I think your central thing you're after is whether it should be prospective or should it be retroactive. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the central thing stands whether it's a policy or estimate that it is prospective. I don't think there's disagreement on that.
That's fine. But does the catch-up go through the P&L? That's the question.
That's the question. Look, it's going to be part of IFRS 10, as we decided, not 13. It's an amendment to 10, right? In the end, on 27. And in 10, we have told people how to transition from consolidation to fair value. So we would have in 10 two different paragraphs, one saying change from consolidation to fair value is something you take for equity, but if you made it slightly differently and you change your fair value, the same standard, that goes to P&L. I think that's very, very strange.
I think that's a fair point, actually, because we've changed, because 13's prospective, so if it was an amendment to 13, that's one analogy, but if it's now in 10, we probably should reconsider how it fits in with the transition provisions in 10. So we've got time now to look at it again, so let's bring that back.
All right. We agree.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah,